So stage three tax cuts, Labour has moved them around a bit, and we could argue whether it's a good thing or not, but it's not really tax reform, is it? It's just changing a few elements of an entrenched system that might rapidly be coming out of date. I mean, we've got capital gains, franking credits, the luxury car tax, the Medicare levy, the superannuation guarantee, tax thresholds that never seem to move fast enough. Does it really all need a good looking at? That's this weekend.
The Morning Call from NAB with Phil Dobby.
The Weekend Edition.
Well, this is dangerous territory, isn't it? Wading into Anthony Albanese's revision to the Stage 3 tax cuts. Sounds like political dynamite, but we are going there. But look, we are not taking sides. But more importantly, let's look beyond that, because this isn't really tax reform, is it? It's just changing the parameters of an existing tax system, one that seems very complicated. How fit for the future is the tax system really? So let's look at real tax reform this week with Kate Griffiths, Budget and Government Deputy Programme Director at the Grattan Institute. And Kate, it was 5 years ago, wasn't it, when the Stage 3 tax cuts were first legislated. And there were questions then as to whether we could actually afford them. But hey, this year, or last year, a $22 billion surplus, maybe even more this year. But, you know, we sort of know this is a bit of a one-off. In other words, is the surplus enough to cover the tax cuts, or will the cuts mean that the government has to cut spending? I mean, do they stack up, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, look, Labour's redesign of the coalition's stage three tax cuts, it's giving larger tax cuts to low and middle income earners and smaller but still substantial cuts to higher earners. And that redesign will help growth to some extent, more than the original plan, because low and middle income earners tend to be more responsive to work incentives. But having said that, we're not talking about a big boost to growth here. So, you know, it's worth remembering that the value of the tax cuts will be eroded over time because of bracket creep. And so, you know, in all, the redesign makes more economic sense than the original plan, but it's not genuine tax reform. And the surplus certainly doesn't kind of justify it in and of itself. The expected surplus is largely off the back of higher than expected commodity prices. You know, that's a revenue windfall for the government, which is great in the short term, but not the sign of a healthy budget in the medium term.
Hence the need for looking at some sort of reform. But just looking at the changes that have been made, I've heard some people argue that by giving bigger reductions for lower and middle income earners who spend more of the income that they receive, now they've got a bit more money, that could be inflationary. It could actually slow down the process of bringing inflation down. Is there any credence to that?
Look, Treasury advice says the tax cuts won't have much additional impact on inflation, like some, but not a lot in terms of extra consumer spending. And so I think if they're saying that, you also have to look at, it's got to be the same story roughly for economic growth. You know, we can't claim that these are going to be major tax reform in terms of driving economic growth if they're also got very little impact on inflation.
Well, and on that point, I mean, do we want tax cuts at all anyway? Would we rather the money remain paying for government services? Because it's not as though, of course, government spending isn't also contributing to economic growth.
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of whether you offer back tax cuts and cut spending in order to afford those, or whether you resist the temptation to offer tax cuts or you know, shrink them a bit and bank some of that for the budget position, you know, they're the sorts of tough questions, I suppose, that budgets are all about. And what's interesting to me with this kind of stage three redesign being announced well before the budget is it feels like we're kind of being offered our dessert before our veggies. Like, what's going to go with that? What's going to kind of make that affordable in the longer term in terms of the budget position? Because we are in a position where even though we've got this surplus looming, and it's just short term. It doesn't at all represent the underlying health of the budget, which is one where, you know, over a long period of time, there's a growing structural problem, a big difference between what governments are spending and how much revenue they're raising.
Yeah. And I guess a big part of that is the aging population, isn't it? You know, we've got a shrinking tax base ultimately because we've got people growing older, paying less tax, and a younger generation faced with, you know, more debt, higher housing costs, student debt and all that, and obviously tax as well. So we've got this narrowing tax base. That's a problem.
Right. Yeah. So spending's been growing much faster than revenue for many decades. And it's particularly in areas like healthcare, disability care, aged care and defence. And Australians have come to kind of expect a wider range and a higher standard of government services. But we just haven't seen the revenue that supports that keep pace. And that essentially leaves a persistent structural gap, which Treasury projects will be about 2% of GDP or $50 billion in today's dollars every year by the end of this decade. Even that sort of grim outlook actually looks a bit optimistic because we've done some research on this last year. And when you think about some of the other spending commitments that are not taken into account in that sort of estimate, things like the huge AUKUS submarines deal or more realistic growth rates for hospital spending, the gap could be even bigger. So when you're thinking about a long-term structural problem and a very big structural gap, it's a bit challenging to kind of sell the story of what needs to happen when you've got this short-term surplus that's hiding it.
So the obvious question, where does the money come from then? Do you go after the older voters who are demanding many of these services? Does it become more a bit of a sort of a user pays type approach? I mean, that's not going to go down too well because these people will say, well, we've, you know, been paying into the tax system all our lives. Or do you go after the younger people who will say, well, you know, we don't want to pay because hang on, we're burdened with the debt from previous generations. So how does it all work out? Or do you go after corporate Australia and look and say, you've got to pay more?
So tax reform like has to be part of the picture, but it is worth remembering that, you know, there are three levers here. You can raise revenue, you can reduce spending, you can boost economic growth. And boosting growth is politically by far the easiest of those three, but in practice, really not that easy. Economic growth's been sluggish.
Yeah, it's very easy to put in a forecast, isn't it? But delivering it is the problem.
Indeed. Yeah. So, you know, the research we did at Grab Institute on this structural gap last year, we put forward a range of options. And I guess I'd start by saying, essentially, you can't fix the problem through any one lever alone. You need a bit of all three. Like if you tried to cut $50 billion a year to meaningfully close the structural deficit, it would entail annual spending cuts almost three times larger than those announced in the Abbott government's controversial 2014 budget, a lot of which never even passed Parliament. So if you remember the outrage over those cuts at the time, just to put it in perspective, spending cuts can't do it alone, which brings us back to why tax reform just has to be on the table here. If economic growth can't do it alone and spending cuts can't do it alone, we really need to be thinking about tax. And it's just a difficult conversation to have, one that governments always shy away from.
So tax efficiency has got to be part of it, hasn't it? Which taxes are good at collecting revenue without causing too much damage to consumer demand, for example?
Some of the biggest opportunities are in things like closing loopholes in the income tax system. That would be a classic kind of base broadening, rate cutting tax reform, where essentially you do close some of those tax breaks and broaden the base from which income tax, but then at the same time that gives you the revenue to offer some tax cuts in return.
So these
lower the rates.
Yeah, these loopholes, I suspect, are related to unearned income, aren't they? I mean, earned income is relatively straightforward. You go to work, you get paid, your employer takes out the tax. It's the investments, it's the capital gains. And I imagine these are the areas where loopholes exist, where, you know, where accountants really earn their money.
Well, look, I mean, if you're interested in, you know, taxing unearned income rather than earned income, then, you know, one of the most obvious examples of what you could introduce would be an inheritance tax. But, you know, I can hear you laughing already.
Well, it's because most places in the world, I mean, Australia's a bit unique in this because most places in the world, they do have it and it can be quite cumbersome.
And it's a sort of tax that's quite popular with economists because it's efficient, has a lot less impact on behaviour, you know, particularly those decisions to work. But ultimately, it's incredibly unpopular with the Australian public. You know, it's seen as being akin to a tax on love, which, you know, is a shame when it's really just about taxing the unearned income and to reduce taxes on earned income. But undoubtedly, that sort of tax reform would just be incredibly challenging for any government to take on. Inheritance taxes in Australia were abolished in the 70s and no government's taken them on since. But so I think, you know, that's a reminder of we've got to work with what's practical as well.
And if you did manage to pull that off, I mean, you would bring down house prices, wouldn't you? Because it might diminish the speculative element of housing investment because people are buying up big and hanging on to it because they think, well, that'll hold its value and then that's what gets passed on to the kids. If you didn't do that, then perhaps they wouldn't rise quite so much. But I mean, housing is a problem for the Australian tax system, isn't it? Because there is so much money invested in property. Taxes that impact on the prices of those properties is not something any politician is really going to want to do.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a reminder, I suppose, that if things like taxing inheritances are just such a long shot, then governments at the very least need to be need to not be subsidising them. And unfortunately, we are through a lot of the tax settings that are here on superannuation and on housing. We're subsidising huge inheritances. So, you know, I do think the sort of tax reform that needs to be on the table is looking at things like the capital gains tax breaks, because you know, the combination of capital gains tax breaks and negative gearing really encourages speculation in the housing market, has the potential to make a big difference to the budget bottom line. If you were to reform that, it's not going to solve, you know, all the budget woes on its own, and it's not going to solve all the housing woes either, but it could be a really good start on both.
So what about GST? That's an obvious one, isn't it? It's been 10% for a long time. I just wonder, when you push it higher, and of course many parts of the world, you know, 20-25% even, then that's when people try and avoid it somehow. You know, you start to move back to a cash in hand economy, and for big ticket items, people start buying stuff overseas and, you know, try and avoid it that way. So, you know, is 10% the sweet spot, or is it? I mean, it seems like it's a quick grab, isn't it? If you want to bring in a bit of extra money, just push up GST.
Well, GST is absolutely a big one. I mean, the first thing I'd say is it's so much harder to avoid a consumption tax than it is to avoid income taxes. So I think it is a more efficient tax in that sense. And Australia's got relatively low rate of consumption taxes when you look around the world. But coming back to sort of broadening, you know, and or raising the GST, you know, that would be an absolute game changer for state budgets. The challenge with GST reform is that it's the Commonwealth who tends to take the political heat and has to spend the money to kind of compensate vulnerable households, but it's the states who get the revenue. So, you know, why would the Commonwealth even bother? So for GST reform to succeed, it really needs to be a package deal with something in it for everyone. And Grattan modelled an example of this a few years ago, where you could raise the GST to 15%, compensate vulnerable households and still have about $12 billion left a year. And that extra revenue, it goes to state governments, but the Commonwealth could share in it by reducing other payments to states. So in a sense, you know, GST reform is a big one, could be a game changer, both in terms of solving the structural problem for Commonwealth and for state budgets.
I mean, it's that relationship between federal government and the states and how they're funded is a complex one, isn't it? But the idea that, you know, if it's primarily driven by GST, it's related to spending. Well, you know, there's a classic case of, you know, you're raising more revenue when times are good and less revenue when you need the money.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a natural, you know, it would have been really helpful to have had in place in the past few years, given what we've all just been through.
And what about corporate tax versus, you know, consumer tax? It's a bit like the supply and demand argument, isn't it? Do you give companies bigger profits so they encourage them to grow further, in which case you tax them less? Or do you give consumers more money by taxing them less because that encourages demand? I mean, there is a bit of a political philosophy behind that. But where do you see the balance between taxing the consumer and taxing corporate Australia?
Look, I think the big issue in this space is that we're essentially, the corporate tax rates are no longer aligned with the sort of small business tax rate being lower now. And that creates all sorts of possibilities in the system, weird kind of incentives now. And that's really unfortunate. And the budget is not in a position to kind of align that by slashing corporate tax rate for larger companies. That alignment probably would need to happen through raising the small business tax rate again. But, you know, realigning those rates is an opportunity to raise some revenue and to reduce distortions in the system because of that split. I don't imagine that the government would go down that path given that those changes were made sort of so recently. But, you know, I have no insider knowledge on this. Just looking at the broader picture, I think there's some bigger and better opportunities in superannuation tax breaks space. I mean, superannuation tax breaks are the absolute biggest hole in the income tax space. They cost the budget $45 billion a year. They'll soon cost more than the age pension. In that sense, it's just, you know, mind-blowing. And they're poorly targeted. You know, half the benefits of those tax breaks are flowing to the wealthiest 20% of households, the ones who already have enough to fund their retirement. So then they're not even achieving their purpose. I think starting there is essential. You know, tightening limits on annual pre-tax contributions, on lifetime post-tax contributions, those sorts of changes would really help to reduce the use of super as a tax minimization tool, which unfortunately it's become. And, you know, I think there's some big dollars in this. Grattan's done some modelling on a range of different changes to reduce those sort of super tax breaks, and it could save the budget more than $10 billion a year. So it would be a fight, but it's a fight worth having on that front.
So are they the two areas that you want to tackle through tax reform then? One, people who are managing to use loopholes to try and avoid paying tax, to minimise their tax. And then the other one, which we've talked about, speculation, just the impact it's having, particularly on housing speculation. Are they the two outcomes building a broader base so it's future-proof. So that's three. It's a bit like, what have the Romans ever done for us? Are they the three things that, you know, you'd really want to tackle?
I think they're definitely in the mix. Yeah, building a broader base does then let you, give you room to, you know, in the context of income tax, to start to cut rates eventually as well, which is, you know, I think where we want to be, because at the moment we are very reliant on income taxes in Australia. And, you know, that's taxing earned income. If we come back to that contrast between earned and unearned income, that's taxing earned income. And, you know, at the end of the day, we should be taxing things we want less of, not the things we want more of. And we just don't do that well enough. There's a lot of things, the most obvious example being a tax on carbon emissions. There's a lot of things that we do want less of where a tax could make a big difference that we just haven't been able to make stick. So, you know, I think there are a lot of different objectives in tax reform. Some of it's about choosing, you know, what opportunities are going to be sort of practical in the next few budgets, and thinking about, you know, which ones are having the biggest kind of distortionary effects as well, because that's going to deliver an economic growth boost as well as hopefully some additional revenue.
And how far do you go with income distribution when you're designing the ideal tax system? Because, I mean, some people argue, well, actually, you know, what you should do is just have the most efficient, the most simple tax system that gathers money in the most effective way, the most efficient way. And then if people are left behind in society, you address that through welfare payments. Don't do that by trying to add complexity to the tax system.
Oh, look, that's ultimately a question of values. And when I think about what we know about Australian attitudes towards tax and welfare, Australians tend to support progressive taxation. So some form of redistribution is definitely within the realm of what Australians want to see. Taxes that do sort of seek to redistribute wealth in order to fund targeted welfare services, you know, that's the kind of realm of consensus. We're quite fickle as a population in terms of the role that we see taxes having, and you know, governments can change that view. They can try to bring Australians along and sell the narrative, explain the problem they're trying to solve for, why tax reform is necessary, why wealth redistribution is necessary, if that's the objective. But you're always going to have, you know, vested interests, running interference, cheap politicking, et cetera, that makes that harder. It's still the right sort of way to go about it. If that's the objective, you know, actually being open about that and making sure, ideally, there's a bit of expert consensus behind it to sort of back the reform in public debate, you know, that's when you might see some success. But ultimately, a lot of the beneficiaries of these kind of big tax reforms, whether it's wealth redistribution, whether it's about closing loopholes, whether it's another objective in terms of improving efficiency, thinking of things like the swap from stamp duties to land taxes, for example. The big winners from these sorts of tax reforms are future generations who would benefit from a bigger economy, a healthier budget, that sort of thing. And they're just not that visible in the debate. It's always about the winners and losers today. So, you know, perhaps that suggests that our politicians should be out there doing photo ops with cute babies on this issue. They need to be selling this story. Well, they need to be selling this story that it's about leaving a better world to our kids and our grandkids. And I think that story has not been well told, and is part of why it's so hard for Australians to come at.
Well, it's certainly a vote winner for
tax reform in general, redistribution more specifically.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a vote winner for the younger generation, isn't it? So land tax is an interesting one. We haven't really got time to talk about it now, but I mean, that's an obvious one where you are taxing something that you can see how that would help with the redistribution element, which younger generations who are finding it very hard to buy a house would be well behind. But how do you go through the process of doing a major tax reform? If you're looking at, you know, perhaps introducing new taxes or, you know, structurally changing the way we do stuff. How do you even start to do that? It seems like that's got to be some sort of large public forum. It's not something the government wants to try and do by itself, because as you say, you've got to bring people along, you've got to have expertise, and you've got to make sure that vested interests, it's very clear that they are arguing against it for their own purposes rather than the future for the country. So it almost needs a public forum, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, governments often go about this by sort of commissioning a review, but then I think back to the last big one, the Henry Tax Review, and it's 14 years old already, and many, many, many of its recommendations are still waiting to be implemented. So, you know, it's a starting point, I suppose, to try to build some expert consensus around what should change. But ultimately, governments actually have to make those changes, you know, to take on some of the battles. And you know, to be fair, some of the big suggestions in that Henry Tax Review, the government of the day did take on and either kind of backed down on when they met kind of vested interest opposition. So I'm thinking things like the mining tax campaign, or where, you know, things like the carbon tax, where they got it over the line and then it was ultimately repealed. So, you know, we have to bring the Australian people along. We have to make tax reform, more popular, and some of the ways to do that are to try and to buy it, essentially, so to offer tax cuts alongside a broader reform. And I think one of the other ways that we could get better at doing this is to really be clear in linking the extra tax to the specific services or spending initiatives that it enables. So that did happen. That has happened in the past with things like the introduction of the Medicare levy or temporary budget repair levies. But whether or not the money directly goes to the cause or just to the usual central pool, drawing that link between tax and spending usually helps governments sell the package, because government spending is usually popular. You know, this is the funny thing. Australians do want a broad range of government services. They want high quality services. I think it's just been so long that we haven't realised our spending exceeds our revenue raising, and we've kind of let it get to a point where we need to do a lot of work on the revenue side now.
Yeah, yeah. So a people's forum, what about, it's a bit old-fashioned, going back to Kevin Rudd days, but what about the idea of getting a people's forum to kick the whole process off? A couple of days, all the experts, throw it all into a melting pot, see what shakes out, and then maybe you start to get, you know, the more detailed plan that comes out of it. But, you know, you might get a few fundamentals agreed in a couple of days and get a lot of publicity so people understand what the real issues are, you know, the sorts of stuff we've been talking about over the last 25 minutes or so.
Yeah, look, I think that sort of thing could be really valuable for grappling with trade-offs and helping the government explain those trade-offs, because I think, you know, we're all not nearly good enough at accepting that there are trade-offs in this space. And so, you know, forums like that could help build consensus, particularly on those sorts of tricky questions.
Yeah, absolutely. There we are, Albo. You had the idea here. We got that one for free. Thanks so much, Kate. It is a complicated area, but thanks for coming on and helping us grapple some of these issues.
My pleasure. Yeah, tax reform is a marathon, not a sprint. So you wouldn't want to do it all at once. And it's not easy, but, you know, neither is good government.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to talk. Thanks.
Thanks.
And that's it for the weekend edition for this weekend. Thanks for tuning in. I'm, of course, back again on Monday morning for our regular weekday edition of The Morning Call. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
The weekend edition.